So those first five, actually, you know, technically, what they were about are about putting aside the hindrances so that you can give rise to jhana. Okay. Jhana just means, you know, a state of complete mental clarity. Actually, that's what jhana is, right? So these things, they actually apply. If you want mental clarity, and who doesn't? Yeah. Right? If you want mental clarity, you have to put aside all these defilements. Right? Now then, we put aside the defilements. Now we're looking at the good qualities that can be given rise to. Okay? This is the opposite way now. Because, you know, it's good. You should understand how defilements arise. But you also need to understand how good qualities arise. Yeah. So now we go on to the good qualities. So look at the pattern again. Here, monks, a monk having the mindfulness factor of complete awakening in himself knows there is the mindfulness factor of complete awakening in myself. Same thing, isn't it? Somebody who has sensual desire knows I have sensual desire. Somebody who has mindfulness knows I have mindfulness. Or not having the mindfulness factor of complete awakening in myself, in himself, he knows there is no mindfulness factor of complete awakening in myself. Same. It's the same pattern, you see. How there is an arising of the mindfulness factor, that he knows. But of course, this is the one section where it changes. You know, it doesn't say how to abandon mindfulness, because we don't want to abandon it, you know. So it says the opposite, you see. How there is a fulfillment of the development of the mindfulness factor of complete awakening that has arisen, that also he knows. So it's the opposite quality, not how we abandon good qualities, but how we promote and bring them to fulfillment. Now, these are called the factors of awakening because it's Bojanga, actually. This Bojanga, it means Bodhi anger. Bodhi means wisdom, awakening, enlightenment. This anger, it means like a constituent or a part or a factor, as it's got here, a factor. So the different factors that arise, okay, that go towards complete awakening. They're actually Sambojangas. Sambojangas rather than just Bojanga. They're Sambojanga, complete awakening. Right. So the qualities that need to be given rise to so that people can come to, you know, that state of mind, which is a state where there is complete clarity on one thing, and also a state of complete wisdom, understanding properly the nature of things, understanding how things work and so on. So one of the most important thing, and the whole sutta is about it, is mindfulness. That is like the basic factor that, when it's developed, forms a basis for all other good qualities to arise, we can say. If you're lacking in mindfulness, you're not aware of the qualities of mind that are arising and so on, as we were just discussing, then you can't do anything about the rest of it. Yeah, it's only when you've got that mindfulness in place that you can develop all the other qualities. So the first factor is mindfulness, right? But that's what we're talking about throughout the whole sutta. Mindfulness in Pali means sati. Yeah, this is the Satipatthana Sutta. It means the establishment of mindfulness sutta. So the whole sutta talking about this, okay? So we'll go on to the other factors that have to be arise. Investigation into the nature of things. It's Dhamma Vichaya. You see, this Dhamma again, so the nature of things, how things really are. And Vichaya means investigating. Actual fact, it's a good quality, you see. You should know how things work. That's also what we were talking about earlier, you know, how the mind works. But not just the mind, but how the mind works. It's a really important thing to know how that works. But also just knowing the nature of things. That means things like anicca, dukkha, anatta. Yeah. Impermanence, suffering, what we say suffering, and non-self. Impermanence is also, these things are always said like as negatives. Of course, they are negative. You know, it's negative in a sense that everything is impermanent, of course, because what it means is we're going to grow old, we're going to grow sick, and we're going to die. And not only us, but our family and our friends and everybody that we ever knew. Yeah. So that's negative. But you know, if you really understand about impermanence, you can use it in a skillful way as well. Because this is another thing. When somebody gets angry with you, if you see the impermanence in that person's mental quality, you can also let go. He's not going to be angry forever. So this is another part of this, you know. Impermanence is always presented as something really bad that we don't want and, you know, it's no use and it's, you know, a kind of horrible thing. But if you really understand it, impermanence means that there can be improvement. Things can get better as well as worse. They do get worse, of course, eventually. But they can also get better. If there's no impermanence, you've got no chance for changing your character. There's no chance for somebody else to become better. There's no chance for growth. But because of impermanence, there is that chance. There is that opportunity. Yeah. So you should also understand this. And when something bad happens in your life, you can keep even-minded. Something bad has arisen. It's not going to last forever. You know, it's arising at this time, and eventually it's going to change. Similarly, when something good arises in your life, you're also not overawed by it or overtaken by it. You also remain calm because you know something good arises that also cannot last forever. It's okay to enjoy it while it's arising, of course. But don't be fooled by it. Don't be deluded by it. Understand, now things are really good, but it can't go on forever. And then when it does change, and it will change, it always changed. There's nothing that ever stayed the same. When it does change and things go down again, right, you're not surprised by it. A lot of people, you know, they're on a high. They became rich in the property market in America in 2006 or 2007. They're on a high. They become rich. All they're doing is selling property. Yeah, and you know, they're becoming so. You know, everything is going fantastic. Yeah, they don't realize about impermanence. Yeah. And then the bubble bursts. And they become bankrupt. Things changing all the time. Things change. You know, we need to have that equanimity. In fact, one of the qualities that we're coming to is equanimity. Yeah, really important quality of mind. But understanding, you know, investigating into the nature of reality, that means knowing about impermanence, knowing about... See, the next one is suffering. This is also one of these English language problems that we can't really translate properly into... You know, we can't translate the Pali term properly into English, you see. In fact, I struggled with this for years. I can remember spending, when I was first starting translation, I can remember thinking, you know, so long and week in, week out, trying to find a better term for it than suffering, and I couldn't find a better term in actual fact. So anything that's impermanent, It has that kind of quality. Yeah. Even, I said before, you know, even you give rise to really refined and really beautiful states of mind, they don't last. Because they don't last, it has that quality of badness in it. Yeah. If you could give rise to that quality of mind and it continued forever, it was permanent, there would be no dukkha. But you wouldn't even be able to get there because there'd be no chance for change anyway. It's because there's this impermanence that you can change from being somebody who can't concentrate, say, to somebody who can concentrate. Now, if you give rise to jhanic states of mind and you manage to maintain it until the time that you die, when you're reborn, you'll be reborn in the Brahma worlds where that state of mind is normal. But even the Brahma worlds, you see, they're impermanent. They last for an extraordinary long time. But they don't last forever. Better to be there, of course, than here, in a way. Better to be there because, it's just a beautiful state of mind all the time. You've got it and, you enjoy it. In fact, certain places in the Brahma realms, you never come back to this realm. It's the pure realms. It's the Sudhavasa, right? Now, in the Mahayana, there's a different kind of understanding, but I'll just explain about this, okay? In the Theravada understanding, the top four levels of the Brahma realms, of which there are something like 11 or something, the top four levels are called the pure realms, Sudhavasa in Pali. Those four realms, if you get reborn in them, you're never reborn back in this world. It's anagami. Anagamis get reborn in Sudhavasa. And from Sudhavasa, they attain Nibbana. Yeah. Now later, when the Mahayana arose, they took that idea of the Sudhavasa, and then it's Amitabha's realms. It's where you're born when you're doing Amitabha practice. And after you've been sitting on your lotus, right, then you attain Nibbana. In actual fact, it's not so far away from the original teaching. It's certainly not far away from the original cosmology. It's only the practice that is different. You know, in the Mahayana, they'll say, if you recite Amitabha, 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 you'll get reborn in that world. In the Theravada, it's not that easy. And in actual fact, Anagami is a really quite developed state of mind. You know, you're just one step off being an arhat. So it's really a very high stage. So I would say myself that the difference is not in the kind of cosmology of these worlds. They're very similar between the Mahayana understanding and the Theravada understanding. The difference is in what practice will get you there. And then anatta is an interesting one as well. It means we say non-self, of course. What this non-self means in the definition is actually not having control over things. That's what it really means. When the Buddha asks about this, he says something like this: if there was a self, you should be able to say, may my body never go sick. May my body never grow old. May my body never die. Yeah. If you had a self, you would have control over it. Because you don't have a self, you don't have control. You have a certain amount of control. If you eat healthily, you're likely, not necessarily, but you're likely to live longer. If you eat junk food every day, you're likely, just likely to die earlier. Anybody could be run over by a bus at any time, of course. But nevertheless, you're giving yourself a better chance. If you're, working in a good environment that's supportive, and same with your family, you know, a good environment that's supportive, that's fulfilling, and that's helpful, not stressful, not making you do bad things that you don't want to do, and all those sort of things. Yeah, if you're living in that environment, again, you're going to, you know, you're likely to live longer. You're likely to be healthy. If you're in a very stressful situation, if all that you're doing... I remember when I was in Singapore in 2007. God, it was terrible. All the people... I gave a couple of talks while I was there and so on. All the people who come up afterwards, you know, they're just so stressed out. There's so much pressure on people in their workplace and everything. They can't get away from it. And, you know, no matter what they do, they can't do anything wrong. That's what somebody told me. If they make one mistake, you know, they're likely to lose their job. That's how they feel about it anyway. Maybe it's not true. I don't know. But what's so much stress like that, you know? If you're in stress, as everybody knows, I think, by now, because there's been so many studies about it, stress is the one thing that is most likely to give rise to illness. Yeah. Actual fact, it's a mental quality, but it affects the body. You can't separate mind and body. Now, somebody who has a good, nurturing, supportive environment and doesn't have any stress, they're likely to be more healthy. So if you produce the right circumstances, then you're increasing your chances. But ultimately, you don't have complete control. You only have limited control. The limited control, you should do what you can. And important to do what you can to make it better. Yeah. But you also got to realize, investigating into the nature of reality, you also got to realize that even I do, you know, even I eat organic food every day, you know, for all my life, still anyway, I'm going to fall sick. Yeah. Still I'm going to die. That's the thing. So it's just knowing the nature of reality. Next factor, energy. Also, this really important, even you understand everything I'm saying tonight or anything any other teacher ever told you, but you don't do anything about it, how is it going to help you? How is it going to help you? Yeah. You have to take the teaching, understand the teaching, and put it into practice with energy. Yeah. If you don't, all the understanding in the world is not going to help you. You can be the most brilliant Pali scholar in the world, but you get angry with your students, you get, you know, lustful with your wife or whatever, you know, you get jealous of your colleagues. You haven't understood the teaching. Now, as everybody knows, I think at one point the Buddha said in the Dhammapada, you know, the person who understands one sentence of the Dhamma and puts it into practice is better than the person who knows 1,000 gathas, 1,000 verses and never practices it. No use knowing it. If you know even one thing and practice it, it's better. Right? But hopefully, you know, you know more than one thing. You know, you should know kind of like, you know, good basics. If you've got good basics in this teaching and you put the teaching into practice, actually it's beneficial. Not only to yourself, to your family, to your friends, to your colleagues, everybody around you, even to the kind of mental environment, you know, like the vibes. You imagine what the vibes are like in the border areas in Afghanistan, where there's bombings going on all the time, where there's suicide bombings going on, where you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You don't know if your family's going to be alive. So much fear, so much hatred and everything. You know, what's the mental vibrations like in that area, you know? Whereas, in actual fact, there is some kind of fear, I know, in Malaysia, but it's much less. But you see how that controls people. Fear. It's actually a defilement. But fear controls what people can do, what they can say, how they can talk, how they relate to other people. All of this happening because of what's actually a defilement. If you've understood the teaching, you have to put it into practice. Do it as much as you can. I always tell people, if you can do nothing more, when you go to bed at night, just when you're lying in bed and before you fall asleep, try to produce 15 minutes of loving-kindness meditation. Even if you can do nothing else, that will help. If you do that, during your sleep, the sleep will also be good. So you'll get not just 15 minutes, you'll also get all during the night, the mind will not be disturbed, you see. Whereas if you go to bed worrying, what happens? You spend the whole night twisting and turning and you keep waking up and you go to the toilet and you come back and you can't get it off your mind and you can't rest properly. It doesn't help, actually. So if you can do nothing else, try and do some metta meditation before you go to bed. The other factors, we'll just go through a little quickly. Joyful interest. It's actually translating the word piti. It's very difficult, again, to translate that word piti. But it means something that you take a really kind of good interest in. Again, that quality comes when you've got jhana. One of the qualities of mind that arises, sukha and piti. Sukha means happiness. Piti means this joyful interest. If you've got joyful interest, for instance, when you're a kid, if you think back, and you suddenly became interested, say, in music or something, and you've got that joy that arises when you take up an instrument or something, you start playing music, or maybe just even listening to music, or something like that, yeah, and it catches your attention, yeah. That's the kind of quality that we're talking about. But when you're talking about it in jhana, of course, what you're talking about is that same sort of quality of mind that is resting on a purified state of mind. Yeah. That purified state of a mind is so attractive, just like music is for a kid. They're attracted to it. So the mind in jhana is attracted to that state of kind of bliss or whatever, It kind of wants to be there. It's interested in it. It's got that kind of joy in it. Yeah. Okay. So again, that's another of these really deep and, sobhana chetasikas. These beautiful states of mind, these beautiful qualities of mind that arise. So you give rise to these beautiful states of mind. But they go towards awakening. But, even if we don't want to talk about Nibbana, even if we don't want to talk about complete awakening, they awaken you to a certain extent. Even you awaken to a certain extent, not completely to become like an Arahat or a Buddha. Even you wake up somewhat, it's better, isn't it? That's better than being just kind of sleeping in the defilements. You awaken from that. You become more alive, actually. Somebody who's just overcome by the defilements, it's actually like they're the living dead. But when you're on the path and you're progressing along the path, you're awakening from that situation all the time. Your mind is becoming brighter. Yeah? Your life is becoming brighter. Your life is also becoming more happy, more joyful, yeah, more peaceful. Next factor is calmness, you see. So again, another factor that arises is calm and peace of mind. Who doesn't want calm and peace of mind? Who wants to be agitated? Nobody wants to be agitated. Because they don't know how to do it, they're agitated. Because they don't know how agitation arises, they're agitated. Because they don't understand the teaching, they remain agitated. they remain defiled. But when you understand the teaching, you take a step in the right direction. All these good qualities of mind arise. Calmness arises. Concentration arises. Also with concentration, you see. If you want to achieve anything in your life, you can't achieve it if you're scattered. Even, you see, we leave aside all spiritual kind of thoughts just for the moment. Just think about your ordinary daily life. Yeah, just what you want for your ordinary daily life. If you can't concentrate on the work that you're doing in hand, you can't achieve what you want to achieve. But it's also a step in the spiritual direction as well. But even if it wasn't, even if all of this that we've discussed tonight was just a materialist thing, yeah, still think how much better everything would be. But in actual fact, it's not just a material thing. All of these things help you in your journey through samsara, you know, and eventually, because they are factors of awakening, eventually they form a complete basis for your total spiritual development. Yeah. Concentration and equanimity. Equanimity is such an important thing, I think, really. It's because people can't keep their minds steady. Because they're pushed around by the world, what's happening in their sense contacts. That's what the problem is, actually. That's why, you know, seeing impermanence, understanding why things are happening, all those sort of things are important so that you can keep your equanimity. Yeah. Don't just let yourself be a victim of what is arising in your world, because you can't control what's arising in your world. If you could, you wouldn't have to, you know, wouldn't have to do all this. But you can't, so you do have to do this. You have to know about all these qualities and everything, and then try to develop them. So those are the seven factors that go towards awakening, and that when they're brought to fulfillment, in actual fact, they give rise to path and fruit. In the Anapanasati Sutta, a very important sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, at the end of that, it describes how you do Anapanasati. That means mindfulness of breathing. Yeah, it describes how you do mindfulness of breathing. At the end of that sutta, it says, if you do mindfulness of breathing, if you fulfill mindfulness of breathing, that in itself fulfills the four foundations of mindfulness. If you fulfill the four foundations of mindfulness, that in itself fulfills the seven factors of awakening. That's what we're looking at. When you fulfill the seven factors of awakening, that fulfills knowledge, that fulfills liberation and knowledge of liberation. Yeah. That means that you've already attained path and fruit. You see? So important to understand how these teachings, you don't just do them and they just stay there. You do when you fulfill these teachings, they actually fulfill other things, and those things fulfill other things, and those things bring you to the state of awakening. Yeah. So really important thing to try and study the teaching, try to understand the teaching, try to put the teaching into practice, okay? First of all, you've got to know what is the right teaching. Secondly, you've got to put it into practice. Okay, so everybody say sadhu.